Hi, good morning, everybody. Good to see you here at North Campus. I want to welcome our East Campus and all of you watching online somewhere. My name is Rodney. If I've never had a chance to meet you, and I get to be the pastor here. And I want to say how awesome to see so many people here at the second service. We literally ran out of chairs here at the North Campus for this service. So I want to just put a little plug in. Y'all know we have a 9 o'clock service, right? Okay. And the air conditioning can keep up better at 9 o'clock. So that's your reason to come on to the 9 o'clock. But I'm glad that you are here and we're celebrating Easter together. But we're going to start a new series today. That's a very non-conventional Easter service. A very non-conventional Easter series, because as I was thinking about preparing for this, it's kind of the last push through the end of spring, then summertime is here, and if you're at church on Easter, you expect us to talk about Jesus died on the cross, he rose from the grave, and tell the story, and we will, but that's not the end of the story. You know that, right? That was really just the beginning of the story. And if we think that's the end of the story or that's all it is, then we're going to completely miss out. So we're going to talk about what comes after the empty tomb. And it's really this idea of your calling, that Jesus knew his calling. You're going to see that today. It's going to lay the foundation for what we're going to talk about over the next 6 weeks. But it's also got implications for you and what your calling is. And the reason why I love how we went with this series branding of like a cell phone is how many of you love to hit the ignore button when somebody calls you? Just be honest. You're in church. Don't lie in church. Anybody love to hit the ignore button? Or you're like the memes that go around like, why would you call me when you can just text me? Anybody live by that motto? Okay. Now here's the thing is I'm horrible about that. Okay. I'll share that in just a moment. But here's the deal. I bet you that it depends on whose name shows up on the caller ID, right? Or what call you might be expecting. And the real question to answer is this right here. It's in little letters. It's on your handout too. But are you going to accept it or are you going to decline it? Like I bet you that when you are trying to get somebody to say yes to go out on that date with you, or if you're married, you think back to when you first were dating. Some of y'all didn't have cell phones and caller IDs, okay? But those of us that did, I bet you there was that call like everybody else got the ignore button. But when her number popped up, when his number popped up, it got the green button, right? Or how about this? If you've ever interviewed for a job, you were waiting for that call, or you were waiting to see if the realtor was going to tell you they accepted the offer or they counteroffered, and that number popped up, you were going to hit the accept button on that call, right? The reality is, you get lots of calls. If it says spam on it, now some of y'all hit accept and you play with them. Any of y'all play with the spam callers? Okay. The rest of us people that don't need therapy, we hit the ignore button, right? And we just let it go to voicemail. We don't have time for that, right? But we all get these calls. Every one of us get calls, and we have to decide in that moment, do I accept it or do I decline it? And what I want you to hear today, if you hear nothing else, is God has a call for you, every single one of you. Whether you are new to Christianity, you're not even sure if you believe, maybe you're a skeptic, maybe you got drugged here, somebody promised you a lunch after church if you just show up, or you're the person that's in church every Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night since you've been a child, it does not matter, we're all the same. I believe we're all the same. I believe you're going to see we are all the same. God did not put you here on this earth just to live a life and then die. Even if at some point in that life you give your life to Jesus. That was not the point. The point was he has a calling for you. And I believe that God, and you'll see this as we go throughout the next few weeks, I believe that God has a calling for you. The question is, are you going to accept it or are you going to ignore it? Are you going to, when you see it pop up on your proverbial caller ID, are you going to say, ah, that's not for me, I better just let it go to voicemail? Or are you going to say, yeah, I'll answer it and I'll give it a chance. I'll see if this is for me. I'll see what I can do with this. Because here's what I believe you're going to see, is when we think about Jesus, just imagine for a second, okay? Just go back before the cross. Go back before the Easter story. Let's remember this as if you've never heard the story before. And Jesus was in heaven. He was God's son. Now, here's the part that's just impossible for us to wrap our human minds around, is he existed for eternity past. My 11-year-old son asked me about this the other day. He said, Dad, I just don't understand. How did God and how did Jesus always exist without a beginning? And instead of trying to explain it away, I just had to say, son, I don't know. There are things about God that our human minds are finite and it's impossible for us to grasp. His ways are higher than our ways. His thoughts are higher than our thoughts. So I just accept it that Jesus did not have a beginning. He existed forever. And here's where he existed, in perfection. Just imagine this. For all of Jesus's existence in eternity past that had no beginning, there was no death, no sickness, no sorrow, no crying, no night in heaven. There's no anxiety, no depression. There's no addiction. There's nobody betraying you, nobody gossiping about you, nobody letting you down, nobody disappointing you. You are in perfection. So why would you come to earth? What would be the point? There has to be something to it. And we would say, okay, well, it was because he lived this perfect life. We know the Christmas story. He was born in Bethlehem, born in the manger, and then he lived. And then at 33 years old, he died on a cross, and we are here today to celebrate he came back to life. I think there's even more to it. That was not the end of the story. That there was a calling that Jesus had, a specific calling, a calling that you and I are going to see this morning that I think we can learn a lot from, because when he fulfilled his calling, he gave us a calling. That his cross and then the empty tomb that we celebrate today was the fulfillment of his calling, but it was just the beginning of the story. That moment in time was not just for you and I to get our get out of hell free cards. That's how we treat it, especially in the South and the Bible Belt in American, what I call churchianity, because it's not really Christianity. Just pray this prayer, get wet in a baptistry, and then you're home free. No, it was to give you a calling. It was to invite you into a calling. He fulfilled his calling, as you'll see in just a moment, so that you and I could be given a calling. Now, why do I think that's true? Well, here's what I want you to do. Don't take my words for it. We're going to let the words of Jesus on Easter tell us that's the point. So open your Bibles, if you have them, to Matthew chapter 9. And if you don't have a Bible, you go on your phone to onelifeknox.com/Bible, and you can follow along on the app there. Here's where we pick up the story. Is Jesus was born on Easter. You know that part. Okay, he actually did grow up. He didn't stay in a manger. We forget that sometimes too. He grew up. At about 30 years old, he kind of burst onto the scene. For 30 years, not many people really knew much about him. But about 30 years old, he decides, now's the time. My father has a calling for me. It's time to put it into action. So he starts calling people to follow him. He begins to develop his ministry so that when he would die 3 years later, and he would raise again, return to heaven, these guys would be the ones who they now had a calling. And their calling was to take this message and to spread it around the world, which is why we are here now 2,000 some years later. Now, here's the part of the story we pick up is he has just performed one of his miracles in this 3-year period of time we call his ministry. He's just healed a paralyzed man. So, of course, minds are blown. People can't believe it. He's been claiming to be the Messiah, which the Jews had been waiting for generation after generation, hundreds of years. They were waiting for God's son to come. But the problem is they thought that his calling would look different than it was. They thought his calling would be something far different than what he actually did. And so they began to criticize him. They began to question him. We're going to pick up the story at the end of that and then go back a few verses, because I want you to see what Jesus says about calling. And then we'll unpack that together. He says this in response to the criticism of those who didn't quite understand why he did things the way that he did and why he hung out with the people he hung out with and why he healed the people that he healed. He said this, now, go and learn what this means. Now, this right here would have ticked off the religious people right off the bat. He said this. These are his words, not mine. He said, I desire compassion rather than sacrifice. And let me tell you why the religious people of this time would have immediately thought Jesus is crazy. Crazy. Because the whole Jewish system up to this point in time was built on sacrifice. If you want to be forgiven of your sins, then you've got to kill a certain animal at a certain time, in a certain way, do certain things with the blood, certain things with the meat, and then you will be forgiven. You've got to do certain things at the temple. The priest had certain jobs to do. You have to dot your I's. You have to cross your T's. You have to check all the religious boxes. And if you do your sacrifice enough and just right, then you might just be forgiven. So the whole thing is built on sacrifice. And now Jesus, claiming to be the Son of God, says, I want something more than that. I want your compassion. We'll come back to that in just a second. But this was a game changer. And then he says, let me tell you why I want your compassion more than I want you to follow all the religious rules. Maybe if he was here today, he would say, I want your compassion more than I want you to be in church on Sunday morning and Sunday night and Wednesday night. I want your compassion more than you vote the right party. I want your compassion more than you follow all the right religious rules. I want your compassion more than you get in your holy huddles and want to just be with other Christians. I want your compassion. Why? Because he knew his calling, and he wanted our callings to look similar. He said, for I did not come to, everyone say this word, East Campus, say it with me. I did not come to call the righteous. Now, if he didn't make them mad up here, he just really made them mad. Because they would have called themselves righteous. The right, righteous just means I'm right. I'm in right standing with God. And these religious people firmly believed, truly, almost innocently believed, naively believed, we are right. These were the folks we talked about a few weeks ago, that they, young men, would have spent the first 5 years of their lives, the first 10 years of their lives, and they literally memorized Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. They called it the book of law. They literally memorized every single word. So y'all think it's bad that you're expected to go to church an hour a week. They had to memorize the whole thing. They thought they were right. They believed that they were following all the rules just right, all the commandments just right. And now who the man who claims to be the Son of God says, I didn't come for you. I didn't come for you righteous people who think you have it all figured out. I came for, say the last highlighted word with me, I came for sinners. And it was on at that point. Now, what I want to focus on before we unpack that is Jesus uses this word, calling. He says, I came to call people. And I think in doing this, Jesus shows us his calling. So let's look at this. What does the word call even mean? For us, we think that when we hear the word call, we think of this cell phone thing. So I'm going to ask you to do something. Take out your phone real quick. You're going to look at something together. And I know you're already scrolling TikTok, reading the closed captions because you get bored. But we're going to just pretend you're following along, okay? Here's what I want you to do. Look and see on yours, how many missed calls do you have? So on your phone, it'll show you in red, if you're a Christian and have an iPhone, it'll show you in red, okay? Mine, I hate to admit, says I've missed 317 calls. I don't know how long it's been tracking that. You don't believe me, they can zoom in. 317, okay? How many does yours say? How about this? How about your text messages? How many unread text messages do you have? You zero people are weird. Mine is 864, okay? That's a problem. I know it's a problem. Don't judge me. We're in church. Any missed voicemails? Mine says I have 318 unread voicemails. So the object of that story is if you need me, send a letter, okay? I'm not going to answer. Don't even talk about emails. That's a whole other situation. Now, I know some of you are with zero. Okay, well, good job, gold star. But the rest of us probably have a few missed calls, right? We have a few missed text messages. We have a few unheard voicemails because there are times we don't want to be bothered, right? There are times we think, I'll get around to that and I'll answer that call. I will return that call, right? And that's what we think of when we think of the word call. It's a great metaphor for this. Because I think a lot of us are receiving a call and we let it go to voicemail from God. I think a lot of us have had a call from God and we're waiting to get around to it. And he's saying the time is right now. Because here's what call literally means. Jesus would have used a word that would have been translated into Greek. And we've talked about this if you've been around here. The Bible being written mostly in Greek and Hebrew makes it very difficult to translate to English. It's why we have to be careful building entire belief systems, entire denominations, entire convictions around just an English reading of the Bible as if it was written to us in 2025. Because the word used here for call is one that actually was a loaded word. And there's not always an apples to apples, Greek to English, Hebrew to English. We have to really understand what would the original people have understood when they read this word that Jesus said he came to call sinners. Well, it was a loaded word that meant all sorts of things. For the first part of it would have meant this, simply to invite or to summon. What Jesus is saying is, I came to invite sinners. I didn't come to invite righteous people. Now, the word summon has even more of a charge to it, right? Like when I yell for my kids in my house, they know I'm not inviting them to anything, right? I'm summoning them, like, get in here, right? When your mom called your name and used the middle name, she wasn't inviting you to nothing, right? She was summoning you to come and respond, right? So how do you know the difference then? If this word could mean to invite sinners, or even more powerfully, to summon sinners to something, how do we know the difference? And then we find the loaded meaning of this word meant the authority of the speaker would dictate the nature of the calling. If it's just a friend down the road knocking on the door, it might be an invitation. But when it's the king calling, it's a summon. The authority of the one calling dictates the nature of the calling. So here is Jesus, the Son of God, the self-proclaimed Messiah, and the cross and the empty tomb would back that up. He said, I didn't come to summon righteous people to me. I came to summon the sinners. This was a paradigm shift. This was unlike anything the religious world had ever seen before then and has ever seen since then. And it's not just to summons them to what? It's not just to invite you and me to what? The word illustrates this, that it's to call or to invite or to summon to the performance of something or to the participation in a certain thing. So in that one little word that Jesus uses, it's loaded. He says, I did not call, I did not invite, I did not summon you religious people to participate in anything. Whoa. I did not summon religious people. I did not come here from heaven where it was perfect and there was no sickness and no death and no betrayal, no anxiety, no depression, none of that junk. I did not come here to summon you to perform anything, you righteous people. I came to do something different. So now we go back to that verse and it has a whole new meaning. See, imagine, just take a moment and realize how understanding one little word that in English we think it might mean something. No, it means so much and it's so powerful, because now read it with me and imagine what he's saying. Go and learn what this means. I desire your compassion more than I want your sacrifice. For I did not come to summon or to invite the righteous. I don't need you to perform anything. In fact, I don't want you to participate in this. But what I do want is I came crystal clear, unequivocally, to invite and to summons and to the participation of and to the performance of. It's my sinners that I came for. And the first thing this shows me about calling, you want to know why you exist on this earth? East Campus, you want to know why God put breath in your lungs and brought you to church this morning? It was to invite you and to summon you to something. And here's what we can learn about calling from Jesus. Number one, Jesus knew his calling. When he was challenged, he was not afraid to say, I know my calling. The first question for us is, do we know our calling? See, here's what Jesus was putting on display for them. This is the challenging thing about calling. I loved hearing this alluded to in our baptism videos. Is Jesus knew that his calling wasn't temporary. See, you guys think I'm here for the righteous, but the righteous are going to be here today, gone tomorrow. Y'all are going to die. They're going to put you 6 feet under the ground. And what good is your righteousness, self-proclaimed righteousness? What Jesus knew is that a true calling, and all of us need to embrace this, is eternal. Let me give you some examples. If I think my calling is to be a dad, what do I do when I'm no longer a dad like I am today? I'll always be a father. But my oldest, my daughter, Mary Claire, I had this realization. In 4 years from now, she's graduating high school and going to college. 4 years later, she's going to graduate college. She's going to go out in the world. 55 years later, she's allowed to get married, okay? Now, if she breaks that rule, right? If she breaks that rule, at some point she gets married and she has kids. And then Aaron does. And then my youngest Charlotte does. If my purpose and my calling is to be a dad, what happens when I'm no longer a dad like I know it today? It's a temporary calling. It's an important one, but it can't be all the reason that I live. If my calling is to be a spouse, one day I will no longer be a spouse. God forbid my wife dies before me, I'm no longer a spouse. If that's my calling, it's temporary. It doesn't last forever. If my calling is to be a pastor, one day y'all are going to get sick of hearing it from me if you haven't already, and I will no longer be a pastor. I'll retire. You'll put me out to pasture. If that is my calling, what do I do when my temporary calling is over? And you could fill in the gaps for your own story. If your calling is temporary, then you don't have a calling that God has given you. Jesus knew his calling wasn't temporary. And what he had to lean into is the rest of this point on your handout. He knew his calling was different than what everybody expected of him. And maybe this is the challenge that some of us have. Is you are putting an expectation on yourself that this is my purpose, this is my calling, this is why God has me here. My calling in following Jesus is to be perfect. My calling in following Jesus is to look a certain way, talk a certain way, do certain things. Or my calling is to be a dad, is to be a spouse, is to be a career person. And maybe your calling is like Jesus's. He knew his calling, but he knew that it was different than what was expected. Now, here's how we can begin to unpack that. We go back just four verses, and you see him wrestle with this with the people who were the most skeptical of his calling. You see him bring to life some things you and I can learn to know. Why am I here? What is my calling? So we go back to verse 9. And again, remember, this is right after he has healed a paralyzed man. This should be the point in time that the religious people go, wow, I think there's something to this guy. He claims to be the Son of God. He claims to be the Messiah that we've waited for hundreds and hundreds of years and for generations. Maybe it's true. But how many of you know religious people are never that easy to convince? Because religion is man's attempt to get to God. And so religious people think, I've got the steps figured out to get to God. And if you don't follow my steps, you're never going to get there. And that's what they accuse Jesus of. So right after, he has healed a paralyzed man. Man's never walked in his life as far as we know. And Jesus prays over him. He stands up and he walks. Proves the power of God. Jesus is God. It would prove it to me, but not the religious people. So as Jesus went on from there in verse 9, he went on from this moment where he heals the paralyzed man. He then sees a man called Matthew, who's writing us the story. So Matthew's telling us his testimony. Jesus had just healed this paralyzed man. He's walking down the street and he saw me. If you've seen The Chosen, it depicts this so beautifully. Because tax collectors, Matthew sitting in the tax collector's office, he was a tax collector, were hated. Hated by everybody. The religious people hated them. The non-religious hated them. The rich hated them. The poor hated them. If there was one thing that everybody in culture had in common, we hate tax collectors. They're the lowest of the low. They were thieves. They were fraudulent. You couldn't trust them. They would add on to your tax and put the rest in their pockets. Everybody hated a tax collector. Jesus saw the tax collector. And he said to him, follow me. That's all he said, two simple words. Hey, tax collector, I want you to follow me. And Matthew got up and he followed Jesus. Now we fast forward. Matthew fast forwards in the story. He doesn't tell us what happens next, except we kind of scene change to this in the very next verse. Then it happened that as Jesus was reclining at the table in the house, many people believe Matthew's house, he says, follow me. And Matthew goes, okay, I'll follow you. Sure. What do I have to lose? Can you come to my house and tell me more? So Jesus goes to his house. I believe this is the case. He goes to his house and now he is reclining at the table. He's eating and behold, who comes to Matthew's house? So the only people he knew. It's not the church people. See, our culture tells us if you start following Jesus, leave all your friends, leave all your past behind. And now you gotta be just church people only. It's not what Jesus did. Because many tax collectors and sinners came and began eating and dining with Jesus and his disciples. So Jesus is fulfilling his calling. What did he tell us his calling is? I didn't come to call the righteous. I came to call the sinners. So that's what he did. But not everybody likes that. It doesn't fit the religious box. That's not what we thought the Messiah would be called to do. That's not what we expected the Messiah to be called to be. And so when the Pharisees, and I've told you, anytime you see the word Pharisees, you need to hear this track in the back of your mind. Dun, dun, dun. They're the bad guys, okay? They're the ones who are self-righteous. They claim to have it all figured out. They've got all the answers for you. And if you don't do it their way, you're wrong. And to be fair to them, it was all based on scripture. They weren't making stuff up. They were doing their best to follow the Old Testament. They just went way too far with it. They lost sight of the wow of God, trying to figure out the how of God. And so the Pharisees, seeing Jesus has healed this man, and that looks like something that a Messiah, the Son of God, would do, but yet he doesn't fit our mold. Because look who he's hanging out with. He went to that tax collector's house where many more tax collectors and sinners, worst of the worst, came, and he hung out with them. When they saw this, they did what religious people and insecure people often do. I would call them keyboard warriors in our culture, right? Anybody can fire off a Facebook post, right? Anybody is big and bad behind a keyboard and writes that email and blasts you. But when you're face-to-face, things seem to be a little different. Y'all noticed that before? So what happens is the religious people don't go confront Jesus. They kind of go behind his back. They confront his disciples. And they simply ask this question. Say it with me. 1, 2, 3, why? Why? This does not look like God to us. This does not look like the Messiah to us. This does not look like the calling of the one who we expected and our dads expected and our grandfathers and their great-grandfathers and go on down the line. This doesn't look like what we expected the calling would be. Why is your teacher, your rabbi, the one who claims to be Messiah, why is Jesus eating with the tax collectors and sinners? Jesus had a clarity in his calling, but it was not what the religious people thought it should be. So if there's anything I want you to know, as you explore your calling, as you try to say, okay, God, if my calling is more than just to pray a prayer, Jesus, come into my life, forgive me of my sins, if there's more to this than that, then you can rest assured that calling is often misunderstood. That when God gives you a calling, it's going to challenge you. It's probably going to challenge religious people. It's going to challenge the people in your life that are closest to you. And this would happen to Jesus over and over and over again. Think of the story where Jesus' disciples are like hungry, so he sends them down to town to get something to eat. He runs into this woman. We call her the woman at the well. I wish we knew her name. And he's talking to this woman. She's a Samaritan. She's a woman, a rabbi, a teacher, a Jew. Should have never been talking to a woman or a Samaritan. So when the disciples come back up onto the scene, they're just spellbound. They cannot believe what Jesus is doing. Why? They didn't understand his calling. Jesus, you shouldn't speak to a Samaritan. Hey, Jesus, we're in this patriarchal society, this chauvinist society. Men don't speak to women, especially Samaritan women. And Jesus said, you don't get my calling. You've misunderstood. Jesus would heal people on the Sabbath. You're not supposed to do anything on the Sabbath. The religious people misunderstood his calling. Your calling and mine is often going to be misunderstood. It's just like when you get a call on your phone. Have you ever seen a number pop up on your phone and you thought you knew what the call was going to be? So you answered it, and maybe it got you in trouble. I don't even remember the context of this. My family would have to remind me. This happened several times where my wife will call. It'll say my wife's name, Harrison, on my phone. And I'll pick it up, and I'll just start talking away, thinking I'm talking to her, sometimes about something maybe I shouldn't let my children hear. And I'll hear her in the background go, that's not me, that's Mary Claire you're talking to, because they sound just the same. I'm like, oh, shoot. Right? Like calling, you could be misunderstood, or maybe you ignore that call. Well, I thought that number was going to be spam. And on the other line, they're offering you a job, or they've got some big opportunity for you. You misunderstood the calling. I want you to know it's that simple for us. It was simple for Jesus to be misunderstood. Your calling will be misunderstood. It happens for our church all the time. When our church started 15 years ago, in our living, almost 16 years ago this May, with 12 people in a living room, we knew beyond the shadow of a doubt that our calling was to reach people far from God. Knoxville didn't need another church reaching church people. But what that has meant over the years, as church people have come to our church or they've moved into town, they don't understand the calling sometimes. I thought church did this. I thought church did that. I thought church should be the other. The church I used to did fill in the blank. And on the list goes. And we sometimes have to say, that's great. There's 500 churches in Knoxville. I'm sure one of those has that calling. And it's not wrong. It's just not our calling. And calling is oftentimes misunderstood. It was for Jesus. It will be for you. It will be for me. It will be for our church. Now, here's the beautiful thing. It's almost comical. Is these Pharisees, these religious people, go behind Jesus' back and they talk to the disciples because they're too cowardly to address Jesus. But Jesus is not too cowardly to address them. So look in the very next verse, in verse 12, how does he respond to this gossip that's going on behind the scenes? He cuts out the triangle and goes straight to the source. But when Jesus heard this, he said to the Pharisees, like, y'all don't think I know what you're talking about? Y'all don't think I know that you're talking about me? I'm standing right here, first of all, dummies. Number two, I'm God. I'm infinitely knowledgeable. I'm infinitely wise. So he goes straight to them and he says, it is not those who are healthy who need a physician, but those who are sick. He starts with this metaphor almost to perplex them. You can hear the tension, feel the tension even a little bit in the room right now. Hey, listen, guys, you've missed the point. This is why you're misunderstanding my calling. It's not the healthy that need a doctor. So if I came to heal, if I came to restore, if I came to forgive, to redeem, it's not you. Because you claim to have it all figured out. You claim to have no issues. You claim to have no problems. You claim to have God. Just absolutely, you know exactly who God is, what he is. You know how he thinks. You know all the answers. So it must not be for you that I came. So it was with this context that he says what we started with. So now go. I've ticked you off. I've made you mad. But verse 13, now go. Learn what this means. I desire compassion. Now let's stop there for a second. I hit on it a few minutes ago, but listen to what he's saying now. He just got through saying, the sick are who need a doctor, not the healthy. You're telling me I shouldn't be hanging out with sinners. You're telling me I should be hanging out with you. You expected the Messiah to come for the righteous people. You expected the Son of God to come and call the pastors and the deacons and the Sunday school teachers. You expected that because what you think matters most is your sacrifice. What you think matters most is the way you do things. And so therefore, you don't want me to care about Matthew the tax collector. You don't want me to care about the other sinners. So the first thing I want you religious people to deal with is your compassion. Who's going to have compassion for the lost people? If I came for you, then how's the sinner ever going to have a chance? If I only came for the religious people, the Jewish people, then how are the Gentiles who you Jews say can't ever come worship? They've got to have a surgery first. They've got to get cleaned up first. They've got to go through all the rituals and rites and everything first. If that's how it has to go, who's going to have compassion on them? Who's going to have compassion on the woman at the well? Who's going to have compassion for the leper? Who's going to have compassion for the paralyzed person? Who will have compassion for the marginalized? If you expect people to look like you, act like you, talk like you, think like you, believe like you before they come to God, who's going to have compassion on them? So you need to go deal with that. You need to go and you need to learn what it means that I desire compassion rather than sacrifice. For I did not come to call the righteous, but I came to call sinners. What Jesus shows us here is that his calling, and I think it's true of yours and mine, East Campus, it's true of all of ours, is that calling requires focus. That I know beyond the shadow of a doubt this is who God's called me to be. I know beyond the shadow of a doubt that this is what God has called me to do. And when the religious people question it, they can question all day long. I'm not wavering. When my family begins to say, I'm not sure that's right, or they begin to criticize me, I will not waver. When my friends, that they see the change that happens in my life from before Jesus and now I follow Jesus, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for them, that's okay. Compassion leads the way, not sacrifice. I will not waver. Just to use the metaphor of a phone one more time, I bet you can think of a time when you were expecting a call. There was something very specific that you needed to happen, very specific that you were waiting for. For me, I think back to 2004, and I was interviewing for my first job out of college. Maybe 2005, I think it was. All I remember is my cell phone wasn't fancy like it is now. It was that little Nokia. You couldn't even text on it. It was one little tiny thing, you know? And I had free nights and weekends. Y'all remember that? Okay. And now you'd tell people, like, I only get like 300 minutes throughout the month. Now, y'all younger people are like, what are you talking about? Yeah, it used to not be fair game, okay? You had to budget these minutes on your phone, right? And I remember that if you wanted to talk to me and you called me between 6 a.m. and 7 p.m., I'm not answering. I only get 300 minutes. I'll call you back at 7:01 when it's free. Any of y'all remember those days? East Campus, remember those days? But when I interviewed for this job, it was at Bristol Motor Speedway. It was my dream job. I'm going to do public relations in NASCAR. How's that for a specific calling? And I had this interview. I'd interned there, and I was waiting to get the call back. Do I have the job or do I not? You better believe I was focused on my little Nokia, not textable, no internet phone, right? Anytime a number with 423 in the area code popped up, I hit answer real quick. I didn't care about minutes. I watched that phone. I was focused on that. I wanted to know exactly what was going to happen next. And I think that's a great picture. We've all been there. You've been waiting for that certain call. You've been waiting for the answer. You've been focused on that. It's the only thing that you could think about. It's what you woke up thinking about. It's what you went to bed praying about. You were focused on that thing. That is God's desire for all of us. To know so crystal clear like Jesus did. What is your calling? Who are you called to be? And focus on that. Let the criticism come. Focus on the calling. Let the doubts come from the enemy. Focus on the calling. And how do we then know if we're accomplishing it? Well, all you got to do is fast forward two chapters. And Jesus answers that and also gives us a bit of foreshadowing. Two chapters later, he's still getting criticized. More things are happening. More teachings are happening. More healings and more miracles have happened. And they still don't understand his calling. And he tells them, let me remind you, in Matthew 11:19, the Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, behold, a gluttonous man and a heavy drinker. He's reflecting back to the friend of sinners thing, eating with the tax collectors, going to Matthew's house and having a party with all the wrong people, according to the religious folks. He goes, here's what's happened to me. They look at me and they see me living out my calling and they say he's a glutton and he's a drunk. That's the religious people. They say he is a friend of tax collectors and a friend of sinners. And that was not a compliment. That would have been a put down. He's a friend of sinners. Stay away from him. He's a friend of sinners. No way he could be the one he claims to be. He's a friend of sinners. No way he could be God's son. So Jesus says, I just stand on business. You want to criticize me? Criticize me. He uses this proverb to essentially say the proof will be in the pudding. And yet wisdom is vindicated by her deeds. You say, who's her? It's a proverb. He's using wisdom personified. Wisdom is her. You want to know if what I'm doing is wise? You'll see it in the end. You want to know if I'm doing the right thing? It'll be proved in time. And what would he eventually end up proving? This is where the Easter story intersects. Because it wouldn't be much long after this that what Jesus would do is be accused of crimes that he didn't commit. He was accused of blasphemy. Well, he wasn't blaspheming, he was telling the truth. And this false trial they would put him on would end up nailing him to a cross, and he would die. Now, you ever stop and think, why is death a part of the story? And it's really this simple. Because death is the payment for sin. So Jesus dying made all of his discounters, all of his critics say, see, we were right. Because if he never sinned, he should have never died. So from Friday night until Sunday morning, even his own followers thought we were wrong. Even his own followers thought he was wrong. Because he never sinned, he should have never died. Death means the end of the dream. Death means the end of the hope. Death means the end of the calling he claimed to have. We were wrong. But what happened on Sunday morning is these ladies, they go to the tomb. And they didn't go to the tomb because they believed him. They went to the tomb expecting his body to be decaying and smelling bad. You know why we know that? Because they took spices and herbs with them to the tomb. It was the custom of what you did on the third day, because as the body began to decay on the third day, it smelled awful. So they would take herbs and spices to try to mask the stench. They show up to the tomb with their herbs and spices, and what they find is not what they expected. This big, huge stone that had been put over the grave to seal the grave with two Roman soldiers to guard it so that nobody could steal the body and continue this, what they thought was a farce of a story, the soldiers are gone. The stone was rolled away. And instead of soldiers, there's an angel. The angel says, fear not. They were terrified, of course. Because you look for the living among the dead. He is not here. He is risen. Go in there and look. You'll see the grave clothes folded up neatly. They ran back and they told the guys, but the guys, of course, too stubborn to believe. They didn't believe it. And long story short, it would take Jesus over the next 6 weeks appearing to hundreds of people for people to begin to see you are who you said you were. You did what you said you would do. His own brother didn't believe him until he saw him resurrected. Thomas, who we call Doubting Thomas, didn't believe him until Thomas said, okay, let me touch the holes, the scars in your hands. I said, we know you are who you said you were. Your calling has been fulfilled. Now we get it. Now because you should have never died, but you did, and now because you rose from the grave, you defeated death. And because you defeated death, you defeated sin, which causes death. And because you defeated sin, you defeated hell. No longer am I separated from God for forever, but I can have the reconciled relationship with my Father I've never been able to have. And then the 11 guys, because Judas had killed himself at this point, too guilt-ridden from the betrayal, these 11 guys began to spread the word. And all of them but one would die for this message. The one that didn't die was boiled alive in oil. John, he somehow survived. Every one of them martyred for their faith because they knew beyond the shadow of a doubt, he fulfilled his calling, now I have mine. Then you would introduce Paul to the story, if you know the story of Paul. As this thing was going crazy and they're spreading, thousands of people in one day gave their life to Jesus and were baptized. Now it's really threatening the whole Roman Empire. And Paul comes along and tries to kill Christians, stop churches. And on his way to do that more, he meets Jesus, supernatural encounter with Jesus. His life has changed. Long story short, Paul becomes the greatest, one of the greatest pastors, greatest missionaries of all time. And this message begins to spread like rapid wildfire across the ancient East. And here we are a couple thousand years later because of it, standing on their shoulders. I think it is safe to say that when Jesus gave this proverb, "And yet wisdom is vindicated by her deeds," he was right. Because what I would maybe summarize this for our last point is simply this: it'll be true for your calling and mine, is a fulfilled calling is undeniable. You'll see it in the end. I think for many of you, your fulfilled calling happened this morning at each of our campuses. When someone you know and someone that you love went public with their story through baptism, because you lived on mission. For me, I stood in the back of the room slinging out chairs left and right because of you living on mission. And I went, wait a second, the fulfilled calling is undeniable. There were people when it was 12 of us in a living room said, "This isn't right. You're too young. You can't start a church. Y'all don't have the right plan. You don't have the right strategy. You don't have the right model." And I stood in the back today and said, "God, thank you for doing something only you get the credit for. The fulfilled calling is undeniable." It's when you find your purpose. Now you say, "Well, how do I do that?" Well, God tells us exactly what it is, and this is what we'll unpack over the next 5 weeks. You would fast forward a few decades after the summary story I just told you. And as Paul is planting churches and he's going on missionary journeys, and now it spreads to Rome and it spreads to different parts of Europe and it spreads to Asia Minor, and literally half the known world in just a few generations would come to follow Jesus. It's amazing. Paul would write a letter to one of the new pastors named Timothy, young guy. He says, "I can't be everywhere at one time." It's kind of like our multi-site kind of way that we do things, or when I'm out of town and we'll do a video sermon, like, "Hey, I can't be everywhere at once, so I'm going to give you this message." And here's what he says. He says, "Timothy, here's what I want you to tell these new Christians, these new Christ followers, where you are. For God saved us, and," I just want to stop there for a second, "the cross is the saving. He died on the cross. He rose from the grave. He ascended back into heaven. That's our hope. That's our salvation. Just follow Jesus and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead. That believes that Jesus defeats sin. He defeats death. He defeats hell. Now follow him." It's that simple. It's not the end of the story. Because he saved you, and there was more to come. He saved you and called us to live a holy life. After following Jesus, there's now a calling on you. Holy life simply means set apart. It means pursuing Jesus. It means to look more like him, to talk more like him, to think more like him, to behave more like him, to just what's on the inside comes out more like Jesus. Different than everybody else, different than before. That's why all of our baptism stories, we teach people to know, this is who I was before Jesus, then I met Jesus, and ever since then, here's who I am. It's the calling to live a holy life. And guess what happens when you live a holy life? We see it throughout the pages of Scripture after Jesus goes to heaven. More people want to know. More people want to follow. More people are inquisitive. The verse, and one verse tells us, always be prepared to give an answer for the hope that you have. We should have people questioning us. We shouldn't have to go stand on street corners and knock on doors. We should live in a way that calls people to say, "There's something different about you. What is it?" And we're prepared to give an answer for the hope that we have. Now, God did this for you. He did it for me. Not because we deserved it. That's where religious people like me get it wrong all the time. I didn't deserve this. I deserve the opposite of this. I deserve to be forever separated from God. I didn't deserve this, but he did it because that was his plan. That was his purpose. That was his calling from before the beginning of time. And he did all of this to show his grace. You think it's judgment? Jesus shows you grace. You think it's retribution? Jesus shows you eternal life. He did this to show all of this, to show us his grace. Through Christ Jesus. So I want to wrap this up, just giving you a challenge of two types. For everybody in the room, then we're going to sing a song and we'll go home. But what all this shows us is what we started with, that Jesus fulfilled his calling to give you a calling. So I want to give you a couple of challenges. First is, look, we know there's a lot of people here. It's your first time, or it's your first time since Christmas, or first time since last year. We're not going to beat you up for that. We're so glad you're here. You are probably why we started this church. We didn't start this church for religious people. And we won't continue this church for religious people. But here is my challenge to you. We're going to dig into what your calling might be over the next 5 weeks. We're going to look at how we can learn from Jesus to discover our calling, to live out our calling, to identify it, to go forward with it in community and live with a purpose. I dare you, I challenge you. Just give it 5 more weeks. Just come back the next 5 Sundays. and just see what God might do. 1 hour a week, 5 Sundays, the next 5 Sundays. See what God might do as you pursue this, as we unpack this. And for all of us, here's what I want to ask you, is maybe you're one of two groups of people. Maybe you're here today and you haven't yet followed Jesus. Today's the day to say, you know what, Jesus, I want to follow you. You fulfilled your calling so that I could follow you. I want to give my life to you. Maybe you're like one of the baptism stories. You had a religious experience when you were younger, but it wasn't your decision to give up control and follow Jesus. Do it today. And then for all of us, we're going to pray together. Lord, would you show me what my calling is? You knew your calling and you were crystal clear and you were focused and it was different than people might expect. God, help me to see what my calling is. Not a temporary one, but an eternal one. And here's what fires me up about that. And I'll shut up, I promise. Is we'll have 700 or 800 people here today. So can you just imagine if all 700 or 800 people said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go out from this place. And when we go to work tomorrow morning, when we go to school Tuesday morning, we go to the restaurants here in just a few minutes. We're going to be 700 or 800 people living out a calling. For some of us, I'm a call to be a school teacher, not just to teach kids math or reading or Spanish or whatever it is I teach, but I'm called to make a difference in the lives of kids over the next 30 years. And I'm going to live out that calling. For others of us, as I'm called not just to be a stay-at-home mom for 18 years, but I'm called to make a difference in the lives of my kids and their friends that spend the night and that they're on the ball teams with, and I'm going to pursue that calling. For others of us, it's going to be, I'm not called just to coach a team, to teach a kid how to hit a ball or a kid, or to score a touchdown. I'm called to make a difference in the lives of these young men and women, and I'm going to pour everything I've got into them, and I'm going to live with that calling. I don't know what it is. You could fill in your own gaps, and there'll be infinite number of them. But can you imagine if we live with that calling? Not because we're good, but because he fulfilled his calling, not so I can rest on my laurels and say, I don't have to go to hell when I die, but so that I could find my calling and live it out too. That's how we make a difference. That's how family trees are changed. That's how communities are changed. That's how eternity is changed. So I dare you, I challenge you. Be back here next week and the next week, and let's see what God does as we all find the calling he's given us. So would you pray with me right where you sit? Would you pray East Campus where you are? And I wanna talk to that first group of people that maybe you're here today and you have never given up control to Jesus. You've known about him, but you've never known him. You've known the stories, but you've never followed. And right now, all you have to do from your heart to heaven, we're not gonna call you up front. We're not gonna single you out. This is for you to say, Jesus, I give you my life. It's not even a magical prayer. There's not certain words that unlock heaven. It's your heart surrendering to Jesus. And if that's you, would you say wherever you sit, Jesus, I give you my life. I ask you to forgive me of my sin. I confess that I'm a sinner. I confess that I missed the mark, but I believe that you died for me and you rose from the grave to defeat that sin. I give you my life. And ask him, say, would you forgive me? Send me your spirit to lead me, to guide me, to control me, to fill me. I want to live for you. I give you control. I follow you. Would you tell him that? And if that's you, before you leave here today, the one thing I'm going to ask you to do is you have that card on your seat. Just check on there. I gave my life to Jesus. I'm following Jesus today. I forget how it's worded. Or better yet, go to the Next Steps area at your campus and just tell somebody there, hey, I prayed that prayer. The only reason I ask you to do that is we want to help you take the next steps. But the most important thing to me is just give your life to Jesus today. Follow him. That's what Easter is all about. The empty tomb was all about that. That's why Jesus was called here. And for the rest of us, would you just ask God right now, Lord, show me what my calling is. Help me to live the calling that you gave me. Maybe you don't even know what it is yet. But start with just the commitment of saying, Jesus, I want to live out the calling you've given me. Not a temporary calling, but this eternal calling that makes a difference, that looks like you, that emulates you, that models after you. I want to follow you. I want to live out my calling. And Jesus, I pray for every single person here. I pray for those that are starting a relationship with you, that that would not be the end of the story. It really truly would be just the beginning of the story. We'll celebrate with more baptisms as people go forward with that faith. And we'll celebrate with more people discovering their calling. And for all of us, Lord, help us to find the unique calling that you've given to us. That might be different than what my parents told me, might be different than what my pastor said. It might be different than what I expected. But Lord, it's what you've called me to. Help me to discover that. Help us all to, Lord. And as we walk in that calling to live this holy life, this separated life, this life that models after you, would you help us? When the criticism comes, when the attacks will come, when the self-doubt comes, Lord, when we stray, to come back home to you, to receive the grace that Jesus put on display through the cross and the empty tomb. And we will praise you all the more for it. And it's in Jesus' name we pray. Everybody said, amen. Would you stand? Let's sing one more, and then we'll be dismissed.